Welcome, fellow industry heroes. This is the Late Night with Chefs show, a show bringing you the realest stories and experiences in the industry, created by chefs for chefs. Your hosts, Doug and Vlad, are both chefs from Chicago who went to culinary school together and have been grinding through the industry ever since.
Another amazing podcast, Late Night with Chef. Truffle Boy and Doug are back at it again, and we're giving you some nice, sweet 30-minute segments. We have a wonderful guest chef appearing today. Doug, can you introduce our guest chef of the evening, please?
With pleasure. Thank you, Vlad. It is awesome to be back on this platform with you and our Late Night with Chef fam. Our guest chef today is Chef Mark Davis. He's coming to us out of Jacksonville, Florida. Chef, how are you doing today?
Wonderful, guys. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for spending the time. Everyone is in their chef jackets, and I'm about to start my day, so I appreciate you guys taking time away from the very busy industry that we all so love to speak to our community and just kind of, you know, talk about your background a little bit, talk about the Florida food scene, and dive right into it. So, Chef, you know, in your early beginnings of, you know, culinary arts, where does that sort of start for you? You know, did you have the typical, you know, 3 years old, 5 years old, or, you know, where was your journey beginning?
So I did, but it was a little different because honestly, in my opinion, my parents didn't know how to cook. So being in the kitchen only kind of taught me the basics of, you know, knife skills, stuff like that. So the food that they cooked, honestly, was terrible. It was only when I started to date my now wife that I really started to cook us, because it was just us. So, you know, I wasn't going out to fast food that much or anything like that. So responsible for putting food on the table. So
I love that you kind of hinted that, you know, I think that's such a big thing is, like, you know, cooking is a passion of ours and we do it for a living. And, like, it's weird when you break it down to, you know, oh, we're like literally cooking people dinner for a living. But it's also such a life skill, right? Like, it's just such an amazing thing to be able to cook for someone or just, like, be able to go to the grocery store and create something amazing.
Absolutely.
So what were some of those? Yes, exactly. Especially, in today's age, you know, what were some of those early dishes that you remember, you know, growing up with as a kid?
All right. So, of course, there's the basic spaghetti. Everybody does spaghetti. But then my grandfather, who I was raised by, he made a dish. It was so terrible. It was mushrooms, canned corn, canned mushrooms, and cheesecake. And the meat was so tough. It was terrible. It was unseasoned. It was it's one of the, like, nightmare dishes that kind of stick.
Was this a crock pot sort of thing or –
Oven, yeah.
Oven? Just cooked in the oven. Just
so
pop all the cans.
He was so proud of it too.
I love it. I love it. For him, it was, you know, the epitome of culinary cuisine.
Yes.
So
chef's kiss.
Exactly. So, what kind of got you started? You know, was it more of just like, you know, doing it professionally, you kind of had this passion and you were cooking, you know, for your then girlfriend, now wife. What kind of made you take that next leap into it?
So what really happened is I started back when I was 15, Sonic Drive-In. So that's where I first kind of really learned how to use, you know, big grills and stuff like that, not just personal home style stuff. And then from there, once I met her, I needed something that would have paid the bill. So I actually started working at a call center about six to six years. And throughout, I would cook, you know, bring dishes in and people would say how wonderful stuff. And unfortunately, in the end, I was let go. So that's what kind of prompted me to make that, you know, faith right into the culinary world. So I knew it would be a pay cut, but it was what I really enjoyed doing. So that's what I wanted to pursue.
I love that. I think that, you know, a lot of people's stories within the industry, at least the chefs that we've interviewed, you know, everyone has such a unique story. And I think that's kind of the essence of our show here is to, you know, dialogue everybody's, you know, journey, why they're it started, and then you kind of drift away and you came back. You know, was how were you feeling when you were able to kind of, you know, pursue your passion? And you're like, you know, I love this. Maybe it's going to be difficult. You know, hopefully I find success. How did you kind of muster that courage for some people who are trying to do the same?
Honestly, I just really thought about it, and I knew that I didn't want to go to wearing a suit and tie every day for work. And with everybody kind of pumping my head up about the food that I was cooking, I was ready. I didn't have a full understanding of, you know, certain things like cooking temp, stuff like that, but that was all taught to me at the restaurant that I actually worked in, because their thing was from scratch. It was like a Southern seafood kitchen. So quickly I would and cook like grit cakes and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's, I've had some good grit cakes. And, you know, I think that working in a scratch kitchen, it's a learning experience, right? It's definitely can be overwhelming at times. But once you are able to kind of see how food is truly made and, you know, understand the process and the technique behind it, it can be a really rewarding experience. What was your, you know, early years of kind of being in this scratch kitchen? You know, did you work a specific station, or, you know, how did that start out for you?
Actually, I was on grill and prep, mainly prep before in the shift I was on the grill, but literally it was such a small staff that we all kind of rotated depending on where needed time. I think it was me and the restaurant was still in their honeymoon phase, so he wasn't really trying to hire people. And I think ultimately that's led to him closing. He ended up within the first year just because money issues and stuff. But great chef, taught me a lot. So can't complain.
Yeah, it's a hard business. It's a hard business to get into. So was that also in Jacksonville, Florida, or have you cooked else places?
It is. It is. I lived in Jacksonville my whole life, so been here 35 years, so looking to get out. But the food scene here, it's not like the other major cities that we have, like Miami, Orlando. It's just like huge tourist attraction to them, and we really don't have that chance to succeed.
Yeah, definitely. Do you find that the food scene there, people are, you know, willing to be adventurous and try new things, or, you know, does all the restaurants kind of stick to a status quo?
Kind of the latter. Yeah, there are more adventurous people here, but we just don't have the restaurants for it. We maybe three or four maybe have upscale, right? And we have things like Salt that are out in Amelia Island, which is a five diamond resort. Travel if you want the good stuff.
Take a little bit of a journey. So we kind of hinted about it a little bit earlier in this episode. And before we get into it, we're going to cut for a quick commercial break. But when we come back, we kind of want to hear about this journey that you've had as far as some of the competitions that you've been in locally, as well as this farmer market journey.
All right, guys, we're back with Late Night with Chefs. We just took a little quick break. And we have the wonderful chef, Mark Davis. And we've been talking a little bit about his early passions and early journeys, but now we kind of want to know about these competitions that you have been involved in and the farmers market and how that all kind of came about.
Yeah. So thank you guys for joining back with us.
Yeah, man.
No, go ahead, chef. Take it away. So this GastroFest, you know, what was that kind of, what was your inspiration behind going into that competition?
So with that in mind, a friend of mine who was actually a participant kind of gave me a spot to do what I wanted to do. And for that, at the time, it's Jacksonville's culinary event that we have. We have little things like barbecue festivals, Bloody Mary festivals and stuff like that. But this one would literally draw thousands of people. So with that in mind, I specialize sort of in an Asian cuisine. So I did bao buns. And honestly, we were nonstop from about 11 to 8 p.m. Huge competition. But unfortunately, it's been a couple of years since they've done it again because everything's shutting down. But
so for the GastroFest, you know, is it a kind of every chef gets to represent themselves, or are there like different restaurant groups, you know, represented in the fest?
Pretty much want people to come create a dish that, or even a few dishes that are about $2 to $3 a piece, so that people can kind of, you know, a bunch of the different local restaurants. But we do end up having with a higher end, also the, you know, like lower end that, you know, they're just
yeah, a little bit of everything. Oh, that's awesome. So this bao bun that you created, what was in it? You know, is there like one type of bao bun? Did you have like a trio?
I did. I had a lemongrass marinated pork belly, one that we did. And then we did a chicken satay one as well. And I had more, but man, this is 3 years ago, so I can't even remember.
Lemongrass chicken, that sounds very good. Or lemongrass pork belly. Kind of, you know, people who aren't familiar with bao buns, from my research of it, there's a couple different, you know, techniques, and I think the most sought after one here in America is the, I want to say Thai style, where it's almost, you know, mushu pancake, almost like a taco style. You know, serving that in the Jacksonville area doesn't seem like something that is on a lot of menus there. So what was the public's, you know, perception to bao buns? You know, was it a hard sell for some people? Did you have a little bit of that pushback, or you know, everyone was able to kind of like make the draw like, oh, it's, you know, it's like a taco?
I think everyone really enjoyed it, honestly. Like I said, we had a line from beginning to end. We couldn't even go to the restroom. It was so busy. But with the type of crowd that festival attracts, I think most people, there would be different types of food, some than maybe to take them to the comfort zone. So I think most people are pretty much prepared for food like that.
That's awesome. And I think that's, you know, really cool to have festivals like that where people are coming, you know, with more of an open mind than maybe, because like you said, you know, each plate is like $2 or $3. So people are willing to kind of, you know, quote unquote risk, you know, the $6 or the $9. But if you're going to a restaurant, you know, typically, depending on where you're eating, you know, it's a $40 to $60 experience. And so being adventurous, you know, with that type of money, you know, $40 to $60, it's a little bit harder sometimes to get that sell than someone, okay, you know, if I spend $3 on this and I hate it, well, it's only $3.
Not familiar with, but a high price tag. Because I like to go to a restaurant I don't normally frequent and ask the chefs how they make things.
That's, I really smart. Like that. Yeah.
I think that's a great way to grow and learn, and especially, you know, in your own culinary journey. You know, I personally didn't go to, you know, a really big school. You know, I know Vlad didn't either, because we went to the same culinary school and, you know, we were in those shoes. And, you know, a lot of self-research is sometimes needed, you know, in those smaller towns and not the big food states or the big food cities. And, you know, I think that there's a different level of passion and drive when you have to go out there and you have to do it yourself. You know, right now I work with a lot of CIA alumni and a lot of, you know, kids who have gone to the CIA, going to the CIA, graduated from the CIA. And there's a different level of passion and drive when everything's kind of spoon fed to you versus when I'm the one doing the Google searches. I have to go to, you know, the library and find these weird books and, you know, do my own research. So, you know, kudos to you for kind of putting yourself out there like that. It's not always a easy thing to ask questions, right?
Absolutely. Another thing that kind of helps with that is the books. got countless books that I've read that I have on the shelf that have taught me, you know, gastronomy, avant-garde, just all about the restaurant industry. And studying up and doing, I think, is the best teacher.
Do you
have... On the subject of books, is there any, you know, and I know where Doug is currently working, they live by one book and one book only. But is there any book that kind of set it off for you, and one that you, you know, go and revise every so often just to give you that spark of inspiration?
Absolutely. I think it was the first book that I actually read by about a chef, and I believe it was called Life on the Line by Grant Achatz. His journey and everything that he's been through to get to where he is today was very emotional. So I think that's what kind of first started my drive.
No, for sure. Especially with his, you know, and with all of us, we sacrifice a lot more than we get in return. And, you know, I think that translates to every part of our, you know, industry, is the fact that, you know, we're feeding people, we're not being fed, you know, we're working these crazy hours, we're giving up our weekends and stuff like that. And then the real thing is that we want to be able to do what we love, and we're willing to sacrifice all those norms that, you know, everybody else gets to enjoy, the weekends, the birthdays, being there. You know, especially with families, it's getting harder and harder. And with this COVID, it kind of rebalanced some of those norms that we want back, and kind of, you know, we're fighting for it now hard. And now that things are normalizing back in the restaurant, it's this kind of weird new dynamic that we're living in. Have you kind of felt that change through your COVID experience?
Absolutely. Yeah, every different. People have started simplifying their menus. To-go meals have been a big thing. I think Florida really never shut down, so to say. It's Florida. So
it did not.
You know, there were still people going out to restaurants and stuff like that. Yeah.
That's awesome. So kind of... looping us where you're at now, what you're up to today, what's your day-to-day look like, what keeps you, you know, waking up in the morning and being passionate and happy and kind of finding that work-life balance, if you can kind of summarize and give us that little bit into your life.
Yeah, absolutely. So during COVID, you know, unfortunately I was let go by a good friend of mine working on this food truck, and he just couldn't afford to pay me anymore because all the spots shut down. So started growing my own food at home in Atlanta to the Asheville area, and kind of fell in love with that laid-back lifestyle. So I kind of changed mentality on the food that I was cooking. I was really into avant-garde. I wanted to work at the French Laundry under Thomas Keller. I wanted to work in – I wanted to have my name out of a hotel. But it's how slow and cool everything is up there. I decided to make a career change where I'm just going to make food that people want to eat. It doesn't have foams. It doesn't have to be anything like that. It can be just simple, good tasting food and bring to the table for Jacksonville dessert. But I want to kind of push more towards North Carolina and end up doing more like farm to table dinners, have my own property, growing the food myself. So that's the end game. So COVID kind of just thought about food. I wanted to do things.
And as you're kind of exploring this, you know, new you and this new kind of perception and what you want to do, how have those, you know, steps look like, and, you know, how has that journey been?
It's going very well at the moment. The chef and owner of the vegan cafe where I'm at now, ultimately, I think he wants to land something in Asheville area as well. So, you know, I told him, you know, a couple of years down the line, if that's a move he wants, if he tells me I got a job, I'm going with him. So really just following that timeline, kind of taking it day by day, I guess I get up there, I'll get up there. But in the meantime, I'm learning how to incorporate local fresh ingredients. And yeah, just pushing every day, taking it day by day. Yeah.
And in your pursuit of, you know, working in this vegan restaurant, I'm really kind of curious in seeing if there's a menu item that can convert a meat eater to be more thoughtful or more open to vegan options. What would that dish look like?
Hi there, listener. We would like to take a moment to thank all our sponsors and welcome any new sponsors to the opportunity of advertising with us. With products cooking demos, brand recognition shoutouts, and other marketing opportunities, let Late Night with Chefs help grow your like-minded business within our rapidly growing industry community. If you would like to explore sponsorship packages for our next show, please email us at latenightwithchefs@gmail.com.
Okay, so since it's a cafe, we do a lot of different like bowls and sandwiches and stuff. One of the absolute favorites, which it's the item that I had right after I visited there for the first time, was mushroom Reuben sandwich. It tastes exactly like a Reuben, but we're using those different mushrooms. So it's still packed with flavor. It's got homemade, you know, houseman kraut. It's really good. I think that, you know, gives that meaty texture as well.
Yeah, I love that. What, you know, what mushrooms specifically are you guys, you know, using for that? And then how do you treat them? You know, do you brine them like you would, you know, a piece of beef to make corned beef? Is there like a rub or like a, you know, a grilling process? How do you kind of, you know, quote unquote, turn this mushroom into a piece of corned beef?
So we slice the mushrooms and then we bring them up to a boil just to kind of tenderize them a little bit, strain them. We have a special marinade that I can't really give away the secrets on. But no, we have the marinade that we let it zen for a couple of days. And yeah. And then that's basically it, man. We make our own cashew cheese in-house as well, so there's no dairy in that. And that combined with the dressing that we put on it and the kraut, it tastes like a Reuben sandwich.
I love that, and I love that you brought up that you make your own cashew cheese. Is there a certain agar or enzyme that is used to kind of stabilize that?
There is. I don't want to give away that secret either. But yeah, there is. Yeah.
No, I love that, but I just kind of like tying in like your early pursuits of that avant-garde, you know, the foams, the settings, the gels, and kind of being able to use that in a whole new way and composing something that is more mainstream, you know, like a Reuben is, you know, one of those sandwiches that's, you know, on that top 10 list of sandwiches that you got to have.
Yeah, everyone's and had a kind version.
Playing with those, you know, layers and building that by yourself. I think that's amazing. And I really love that idea. And I'd love to try one. So whenever we'd be in the Jacksonville area, we'll definitely stop by and be impressed by that, because that sounds amazing. And as like an alternative to meat, I think that's a perfect thing to bring you home. You know, that's something that is, you know, on a meat lover's list, but now you're giving it to them with no meat, but still all the flavor. And I think that's something that's very hard to achieve, but when achieved in balance is a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. It's like harmony, because most people think that they can't go without meat. It's more, I guess, they're afraid to go out of the zone a little bit. Like even me, I'm not fully vegan. I still enjoy some meats. We get so many people that come up and they're like, oh, there's no meat in this. I can't have it. And then they come back and order something. I'm just going to, after they eat it, they're like, what was that? That was delicious. And it's to know, you know, like surprise people.
And I love that you're breaking down these stigmas, you know, in an area like Jacksonville, Florida, where there's probably not a lot of, you know, other vegan cafes in the area. You know, how is that for you as a chef when you kind of are, you know, up against these stigmas of, oh, this isn't going to fill me up, or, oh, I'm not going to be satisfied after eating this, or I'm not going to like it. and then you watch someone eat it and you kind of see the thought process changing, you know, in the moment, in the present. You know, talk us through that, those feelings that you have.
Considering I still eat a little bit of meat, it still affects me in a way to where I don't understand people won't give it a chance. It's kind of, I don't know, when you get the folks that are like, oh, there's no meat, and they just walk off, and it's like, well, you never know if you don't try it, you know what I mean? So personally feel like an attack when someone doesn't want it because the food is still delicious. But
this is great. Just see it.
I'm blaming fully, but I wish people were a little more open. And Jacksonville, yeah. And Jacksonville is one of those cities where, you know, a lot of the big vegan followings and vegan people like in Sarasota, even Miami's doing really well right now with their vegan restaurants. But I think in total, there's probably less. Five or how many I can count on one hand of vegan restaurants in Jacksonville. So, and especially, you know, there's nobody doing what we're doing. A lot of it's fried and yeah, not really good for you.
Right. Yeah. Fried mushroom is going to taste delicious no matter what.
Still delicious, but yeah.
And I think, you know, even here in, you know, New York, you know, some of the big names, obviously the biggest in the plant-based scene right now is, you know, 11 Medicine Park, EMP, and Daniel Hume. And even though they're doing it, you know, at an incredibly high level, with an incredible amount of detail, you know, there's still even backlash from them. You know, the very infamous Pete Wells article from New York Times. You know, I think that people need to see that it's more of a necessary change in the American food system than necessarily trying to push ideals to someone. It's like, hey, you know, what's going on right now is it's not sustainable. You know, we can't keep it up. Maybe we should, you know, look at these alternatives. It's not like, you know, we could continue to operate the way that we are. We're just wanting to be different. Do you kind of feel that
you're kind of, I mean, with the way the fishing. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, continue, please. You're 100% right about, you know, the fishing industry and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, the facts are pretty terrifying. And they're saying within just like 3 or 4 years that, you know, fishing's not going to be sustainable anymore just the way we're farming them now. So, I mean, even now you can turn a piece of watermelon into a tuna steak. So.
Very much so. Very much so. Well, Chef, before we get off for the day, you know, if people are interested in coming and trying your food, are you, you know, want to stay in touch with you and, you know, see what other kind of amazing plays you're doing, you know, where can they find you?
So Jax is located at 26 Atlantic Boulevard here in Jacksonville, Florida. In addition to that, I'm still working on a side project, going to be a food truck specializing in Asian noodle dishes. It's going to be called Tiger Belly Noodle Company. So in the meantime, on weekends and stuff, and free time, I'm still doing pop-ups. I'm doing meal delivery services, which all kind of stemmed from when everything shut down. I started serving to the community and got a nice feedback from that. So I think that's something I'm going to pursue.
Awesome.
I love that idea. Yeah, that's amazing, man. And we're rooting for you. We're going to stay posted on everything you do. We're going to make sure we give you lots of love, likes, comments, all of that. And everyone tuning in, please make sure to check out Mark Davis. He's doing some incredible things out in Jacksonville, Florida.
Jacksonville, Florida. The one and only.
So,
that's it.
Yeah, guys. I mean, thank you so much for coming on the pod. Everyone for tuning in. We'll be back next Monday with another guest chef. making these a little bit more fun, a little bit more gullible. I know everybody's attention span is at like 5 seconds nowadays. So, you know, we're trying to give it as sweet and nice as possible. We're getting back on the groove and we got some super exciting news coming. But guys, make sure to give some love to Mark Davis. Check out what he's doing. And if you're around Jacksonville, take the drive. It's definitely going to be worth it. And say what's up to him.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Chef, for tuning in for us. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you, The Last Dose, for tuning in and putting those thoughtful comments on our page. And until next time, everybody, stay safe and keep cooking.
Walking in, two top, first course, Caesar, prawns, followed by second course, holding, filet, mid-rare, halibut.